B-Pod Studios.
Huh. I mean, you know, like, so I think people invested a lot in Brady as well, so I think that's where it came from. I personally didn't care about the fan snub as much as the Kraft Belichick snub, but I understand that visceral reaction when, you know, you bought his jersey, you bought his TB12 book, you bought his nuts, you're going to buy the Brady brand, you're flying to wherever to watch him on the road for one game a season.
Right.
And on top of that, you defended the wall. Like, I get why people viscerally reacted the way they did. That wasn't my biggest issue,
and
but I get
they know that it would have taken Brady absolutely nothing to include it in there. Wouldn't have taken much of anything.
Yeah, would have taken 30 seconds for his intern to write
it
up.
I just can't tell you how many times on the road or here at the end of games when it's in control and the Brady chant starts. And that's from Patriots.
And I think if there's anything you could take like some sort of solace in if you're pissed off is that it's really not a snub of you. It's a snub of the franchise.
Bingo.
Why?
This is not about the fans.
Right? It's less about you and more about Kraft or Belichick, whoever you choose. I think it's got to be more about ownership than it is about Belichick.
Yeah.
I think he knew that someone would be upset by him leaving the Patriots off within the organization. And I think that if you're looking at that situation, he knew that it would upset ownership.
Mm-hmm.
And he was willing to do that.
How many pictures do you think have been taken of him in his career, Jones, since 2001? Pictures, actual photo shots.
How many photos of
him? Yeah, how many multiple
professional
photos
of Tom Brady on the field?
Yeah, you would think.
And he selected the one of him in Tampa gear at Gillette Stadium in the rain.
Yes.
Smiling.
And I would also say that out of the thousands upon thousands of Tom Brady photos that have been taken in his career,
sure, David Silverman has
how many of those
of
hang within Gillette Stadium in and around the football operation? Zero, because they took them all down.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, the mural on the wall's
down. This
is a
two-way street.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, why'd they take that down?
Oh, they put Kenny Chesney's up.
Oh.
Is that what's really up there?
Yeah, Zoe told me that. They replaced Brady with a Kenny Chesney mural somewhere.
And Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
Well, Taylor Swift, I get.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
That one's fair.
No, that one's appropriate.
Yeah.
What are we doing back there? Is everything broken still, guys? Yeah, everything's broken?
Always.
Okay. Just going to take another call then. Tommy's in Lynn. Tommy?
What's up, Bertrand? What's up, Zolak? What's up, Adam Jones?
Tommy! What's up, Tommy? What are you doing calling this show, Tommy?
I wanted to call you guys because I want to talk about Brady to you guys.
All right.
Zoe, I know you're a big Brady fan.
Yep.
You love Brady. But
yep.
I want to know what you think about him leaving New England out on his statement. And then after that, Kraft reached out to him. And then he reached back out to Kraft. And then Belichick talked to him. And then this and that. What do you think all about that?
Pretty good synopsis, yeah.
And what do you also, think? Zoe,
yeah. Sorry, Tony.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Yep.
Yeah, and also, Zoe, I have a sports podcast, Tommy Knows Best Sports Podcast, and I want to get you on there.
I've been a guest on there before,
you have? Zoe.
Yes, I have, yes. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, Adam Jones is on there.
Some good questions. Some non-sports questions, Zoe.
Okay,
we can get that done, Tommy.
Have some fun.
We have a mutual friend that... that you know, and his name is Rich Cassidy. I'm going to shout him out. Rich Cassidy.
Richie! Yay!
Shout out to Richie.
Richie!
Yes.
Can I swear on it?
You on there. What?
Can I swear on it?
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Opinionated.
You like donuts?
Nope.
And passionate.
We all know you're not the brightest bulb on the branch.
Okay? Brightest bulb on the branch?
Zolak and Bertrand, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
You never know what's going to happen here day to day, Jones.
No, this is great. Guys just raw dogging some bacon in here.
So I decided to make a batch of bacon in the toaster oven.
It's good.
I thought he was doing lasagna today.
Yeah, whatever happened to that lasagna you were going
to
make?
I forgot to bring it in.
That's
my kid asked me,
that feels like losing out on step one of the bringing everyone lasagna plan, but yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of bacon, my kid asked me, Dad, when are we going back to that expensive steak place to get the big chunks of bacon and they bring it out and we ate it before? And I'm like, oh, that's so good. We got to go back.
What do you mean the big chunks of bacon?
It's
on like Brussels sprouts or just big chunks of bacon?
Yeah, it's like cooked in its own bacon fat. It's like, it's delicious, Jones.
How about that?
You never
David
had the bacon?
David Burke Prime with the hanging bacon.
Dad, when are we going back to that expensive steak restaurant?
Del Frisco's does it.
Where they serve you chunks of bacon?
Oh, my God. Del Frisco brings it out in squares.
Stillwater.
Like, Zone, I'm a big fan of David Burke Prime. Pork one of our favorite spots.
Uh-huh.
Mm. It does smell good in here. I'm not going to lie.
It smells better than my feet.
That is true.
Yeah.
He's not wrong.
Once the bacon smell wears off,
is Perry in or out? What's the deal?
He's here.
He is? I don't see him.
I don't see him.
I don't see him either.
Sorry, Phil.
What's up, boys?
How you doing?
Can you hear me?
We don't see you, but we hear you somewhere.
Can hear you.
Well, all right. It is a radio show, right? You guys should be good with that.
That's a good point.
You don't sound great today either. I won't lie.
It doesn't sound the same. You sound like you're in that closet again.
All right, well, I'll listen to T-Bone, whatever he tells me to do.
He's in that closet at work.
There, so if you want to look up top. Oh, there he is. We got him now. Hey. All right.
He's wearing a Dixon flannel.
Oh, he definitely is.
That's three Dixon flannels.
Looks like you got a nice haircut there this week. Did you get that haircut?
Did.
Yes.
I did. That's this is the L.A. haircut. Going out to L.A. in a couple days.
Oh, nice. Oh,
man, looking sharp there.
So how many days you going to L.A., Phil? What are you going to do out there?
We'll be there Sunday through Friday and then red-eyeing it back on Friday night. So no game, but always a good time.
Yeah, what are you covering out there?
Well, make sure you get some of that Pacific air out there. John Henry,
big I'll miss you guys. I'll miss you guys. The fact that you're not going to be there is disappointing to me.
Yeah, we're disappointed not going also.
Really?
Yeah.
But there's a lot of other great people that will be out there for us to talk to.
Oh, yeah, will Louth be there? I'm just wondering, is Louth going to be there?
Hopefully he'll be there.
Really good trip, huh? Yeah. Interesting.
Oh, should I give him a shout?
Yeah.
Yeah, go
Maybe
ahead.
You guys could physically
try to meet up,
go
to an expensive steak dinner.
Yeah, that'd be great since we can't. We could show up and go to
expensive
steak dinners.
Send you pictures of big pieces of bacon.
But we can't show up and do expensive big interviews face-to-face. That just sucks, you know? So.
All right, Phil, what'd you make of the drama this week with the statement by Brady, the retirement by Brady, the denial of retirement on Monday, the retirement actually happening Tuesday? What do you say to all of it?
This is human beings feeling human emotions still. I feel like it was intentional, right? Oh. And I think the obvious reaction there on the fans' part is okay. I've argued with my guy, Tom Curran, about this, admonishing the fans for some of their reactions. No, that's how fans react. Fans are emotional. You know who else is emotional in this whole situation? Thomas Edward Patrick Brady. Because if he wasn't, he wouldn't have left the team out. He wouldn't have chosen the photo that he chose.
Yeah.
Everything's calculated. And so I think this is just all out there for us to see right now. I don't think he anticipated it was going to blow up the way that it did. And I think that's why we get the video yesterday, heavy on the Patriots video, heavy on the caps, right? When he says thank you all in all caps.
Yeah, I feel stronger when I see caps. Yeah.
That feels like something that would resonate with you.
What did Tom say? What did Tom say about this? I missed it. What's Tom's take?
Tom Curran.
Yeah.
He's been. Listen, and I've heard this reaction from fans as well, going against other fans that are reacting emotionally to this and saying, "How could you? Where is our acknowledgement?" And I understand at the base of that, you could say that's selfish in a way. But again, this is how people react. They react emotionally to something that they've invested in emotionally for decades. And so when a retirement announcement comes out and they're expecting to see some acknowledgement of over 90% of the career that this guy had, and they don't get any of it, I get the reaction in general. Some of it's a little over the top. Okay. Twitter.
I have friends that have named their kids and dogs after the guy. I mean, they're that nuts.
And it hurts.
Yeah.
It hurts, right?
Yeah.
I know NBC 10 cameras found people in Boston crying, you know, middle-aged women crying because they felt like, in a way, this was a betrayal. So I don't give them a hard time for feeling that way. Obviously, this was primarily one-sided relationship between Tom Brady and the fans here in New England, right? He gave quite a bit over two decades, and he has said over and over and over how important his time here was and how appreciative he was of the people here, the fans here, his teammates, his coaches. Kraft family, all of that. That's all on record. But I don't blame people for getting upset when they don't see that either, because I know it was my first reaction, not to get upset about it, but I'm scrolling through. Okay, one slide, two slide, eight slides, nine slides, whatever it was, and not a single mention. I mean, it was obvious, and I think that's how a lot of people reacted.
Yeah, and I also would say don't admonish fans for being emotionally invested, which I think you've said, Phil.
Right?
It's like the
I'm with you on that.
That thing is what drives all of it. It's why, you know, people are tuning into NBC Sports Boston and 98.5 The Sports Hub or anything else. It's the emotional attachment and the emotional investment into the product that you know, keeps people engaged. So,
and by the way, I don't blame Brady for feeling that way either. Again, right? These are human emotions, and even Tom Brady, who I think a lot of people look at and say, "Well, he doesn't act like he didn't carry himself that way. He doesn't." Clearly he feels the same things that we do, and clearly he feels as though the Patriots didn't earn the right to be mentioned in that retirement announcement. The Bucks paid for it. The Patriots didn't. If you really wanted this moment, you would have kept him around. I'm sure that's how he looks at it. And I don't blame him for feeling that way either. Is it petty? Yes. Should he, in an ideal world, should any of us feel that way? No, but he's a person. He's a human being. He feels the same things everybody else does.
Do you think, Phil, the statements from Kraft, the eventual statement from Belichick, the little social media flirting there from Brady with his heart emojis, do you think anything is thawed, or do you just think some of that is for show, window dressing?
I honestly think that the relationship between Belichick and Brady thawed quite a bit after the Patriots game against the Bucs back in October. I think that conversation that they had went a long way. So I don't think Brady leaving the Patriots out is necessarily a shot at Bill Belichick so much as it is the guy that he believes the buck stops with, and that's Robert Kraft. And Robert Kraft was involved many a time in Tom Brady contract negotiations, and Brady even mentioned it to us. I mean, didn't he ask us? I think it was a training camp.
Go ask
post-training
Mr.
camp.
Yep.
Right. Yeah.
Go ask
Mr. Kraft. Go ask Robert. So to me, it's pretty clear. The feelings are still relatively fresh, even though it was a couple years ago.
Wow. Could it be that he's fine with Bill, but not fine with Robert? And that would be the killer. You know, to Robert.
Fine with might be strong.
What has happened since week four to get to this point, though? It's my point. Like, you mentioned it. Tom was really good post-game. Like, hey, man, yeah, I could see something happen here eventually, you know, and I'll be back here. My kids are born here. I'm born on Brookline Street, all that. Like, what happened since week four?
I'm not sure anything happened. I think even when you look back to week four, and I thought one of the sound bites that he used in this most recent video was actually really interesting. And it's his post-game interview. I think maybe it was with Aaron Andrews. I'm not sure who it was with, but he's on the field still. And they must have asked him about the emotions that he was feeling. But the clip that he uses in the social media video is, "I'm not tearing up. I'm past all that." And why would you go out of your way to include that in this video that you just post? To me, it's to
closure.
Indicate
closure.
And there's a sentimentality portion of this that is behind me, right? I will always love my time here. I will always love the people that I establish relationships with here. Still very close with a lot of people here. But for me to be sad and give you something sappy in a post-game interview right now about my time here in New England, no. I'm playing football. They didn't want me to stick around. They did, but it was on their terms. And now I'm a football player at a visiting stadium. I even think before the game there, Zoe, I don't know if you guys remember this. I'm sure you talked about it in the pregame show. But Robert Kraft wanted to see Tom Brady on the field. And he was anticipating Tom Brady being on the field as he does. I don't know how frequently he was doing it with the Bucs. We're obviously not right. Following him as closely. But usually his routine was, for years with the Patriots, get off the bus.
Yep.
Get onto the visitor field and just take it all in. I don't even know if he had to look around. Some guys like to do it to see, okay, where's the play clock
always,
and what's the wind like?
He would always go to that visiting sideline and sit down and FaceTime his kids. I've sat with him multiple times on a road like that because we're there before they get there. And it was uncomfortable watching Robert have to stand there and wait.
Well, and that's what I was going to get to. I don't think Tom Brady wanted that photo op,
right.
Really, you know, in the same way that maybe Robert and Jonathan Kraft did. So, you know, I just think that there are still some hard feelings there. And that clearly came through with that social media post, the initial retirement announcement, at least.
All right. Phil Perry is with us. That topic is never far, but also we need to ask him about his tweet on Adam Gase as a possible replacement for offensive coordinator. With the departure of Josh McDaniels, we'll ask you about that, Phil, coming up next.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Paulie in the truck.
The audience loves him so much.
Dude, I love you.
It's kind of creepy.
Dude, you've got me mesmerized, and I hang on every freaking word you say.
Zolak and Bertrand, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Phil Perry of NBC Sports Boston with us on Zolak and Bertrand, Jones in for Hardy today from our Town Fair Tire Studios. Phil, you had a tweet, I think it was yesterday. Was it yesterday about Adam Gase as a possibility here in New England? So I'm going to do what I told the listeners I would do. Who's your source on that information, Phil? Where'd you get that from?
Yeah, how do you like these lights, Perry, huh?
Just things you hear when you talk to people who know things sometimes. This is a guy that Bill Belichick has a lot of respect for. He comes from a coaching tree that has a lot of Belichick branches. He worked under Nick Saban in LSU. He worked under Josh McDaniels in Denver. The language, this would be interesting to me. Just getting a chance to talk to Dan Copen yesterday, who has worked with both Bill O'Brien and Adam Gase. He was with Gase in Denver. He told me he thinks the language, which I think is big for Mac Jones, the language with Gase, if it did end up being Gase, would be pretty similar, if not the same. And so he didn't see a huge hurdle in that regard. As I think what a lot of people are concerned about is bringing in a quote-unquote outsider and then having Mac Jones sort of having to start from scratch when it comes to picking up whatever the offense is that comes with that next OC.
See, that's interesting.
I think Adam Gase would be able to really meld what he's already done, though, and what the Patriots have here, and it would be, from what I understand, a relatively smooth transition.
Yeah, and that's why I went Billy, because I think, you know, from a comparable standpoint, when you talk terminology, you know, zero out slot, that Ron Earhart offense, that system, I don't know anybody else in the league that uses it. I think they're the only ones. And Billy's a cast off of that. I wonder if Billy took that to Penn State, called it that way. I wonder if he used it down in Houston to call it that way. I think it's critical for Mac. And I said this. I mean, you know, Drew's first 6 years, he had five different offensive coordinators. To keep that same system of there's got to be a comfort level, there's got to be an air of confidence that, okay, I know what's being called, instead of getting in the huddle, well, wait a minute, what's that for me? Split means this or that. It's got to click quick for the kid. And the fact the kid hung back to work with Billy to teach him Bama's offense, which tells me they didn't run the Earhart system in Alabama. They ran something completely different.
No, Phil, you've written this, right? Alabama has like its own offense, right? Because they keep rotating through all these different offensive coordinators. They have their own thing, right?
Saban has said, now, nobody has their own thing where it's, you know, it's just the language comes from, you know, Nick Saban's brain and Nick Saban's brain alone, but they have an offensive playbook that he says enough with the rotating offensive coordinators. We can't have a new offense every year, Lane Kiffin, Brian Daboll, Bill O'Brien, whoever it is. So we're going to run our offense. And so, you know, I think the language, some of that probably would be rooted in the Earhart Perkins system. And I think there are a few guys, maybe so some of those guys have cycled out of the league, but I know like Todd Haley was an Earhart Perkins guy. And so maybe there are guys that worked for him in the past or
how much Daboll,
staffs that have been related with him.
Wonder how much Daboll
I would think would, but he has bounced around a little bit. He's had a little bit more of a varied coaching experience than a lot of guys who started with the Patriots and worked here for as long as he did. So, you know, he probably has some different things mixed in there as well. I just think to your point, though, the number one choice, the best choice, would be Bill O'Brien,
right,
for that consistency.
But I also think it would help Billy. I think Billy would be more at an advantage than Gase would, because Billy would be able to digest Alabama's offense for a year, and he could sit back and watch old Jones film and say, okay, this is what they were trying to do. This is what they were trying to do with him. Mm-hmm. And here on third down is where he was really successful. Here where he was not successful. So Billy would have that Bama offense background to sort of advance it to this offense that Billy would come here to be turnkey for him. You know,
well, and not only do you have that shared experience, but you have Bill O'Brien, who ran the greatest two tight end offense in the history of the NFL.
Bingo.
In 2011. And the guys they have now are not the guys they had then, talent-wise, by any means. It's not close. But at least he has that background. He has that foundation. He could probably get the most out of those kinds of guys. I would be interested to see how he works with a young quarterback. You know, obviously we saw him here. He was working with the greatest of all time. But he had Deshaun Watson as a young player, and Deshaun Watson, you know, really under Bill O'Brien's tutelage, became one of the best in the league. And I know 2020 was a disaster year, but Deshaun Watson became who he became while Bill O'Brien was there. So, you know, I think he is far and away the best option, and I think he would be interested to come here. And I heard Albert Breer, our good friend Albert Breer, not sure why I can't say his name, but I heard him on Dutch and Rich this morning say, you know, Bill O'Brien, not only does he have all sorts of connections here still, he's from here, obviously, but he had heard that Bill O'Brien's family has remained in Houston. And so, you know, that has to be hard. I don't know if it is. I haven't talked to Bill O'Brien. But to be away from your family would have to be difficult. And maybe an opportunity to come to the Boston area would be a better opportunity for his entire family. And,
well, you know,
I've heard something similar in that he's been living with his good friend, Doug Marrone, who also became an assistant for Saban's coaching staff down there. So I think it would work on a lot of different fronts for both sides.
It's interesting because it's I know
in the dorms.
Billy's son needs special. Billy's son needs around the clock care too, though. He's got special stuff at home.
Explain that.
Which, where if you feel safe and you're getting the right type of care you want, it's very difficult to pick up and move a family like that instead of, you know, 2 5-year-olds that are in elementary school.
So do you think he'll stay in Houston until he has something that he believes is long term?
Right. So that tells me that he looks at Alabama as a sort of a springboard.
Well, this is why I would say if that's his plan.
Well, that's what that job has been. I mean, Phil just listed the people who've done it, but that's what that job has been.
That's why Nick wants his own offense, because he knows this is going to, we're going to be good and people are going to want our guys.
But I've heard some people say, why would Bill O'Brien want to go to New England? What's the draw to go to New England? And I said it would have to be two things. One, he really wants more money at the moment, because he would certainly double his salary. And so he would want more money, maybe even more than double his salary, even though I think he's got plenty of money at the moment. You know, he's done pretty well in the NFL. That would have to be one thing. The other thing would have to be that he wants to be back in this area because he long-term wants to be the head coach of the Patriots. I would say that if he came back to New England, his job security would be really good for pretty much however long he wanted to be here. Mm. So that might be another reason, Phil, right? I mean,
I would think that would be a big part of it. You know, and even though Alabama has been a springboard for guys to take that offensive coordinator job and go and be, you know, whether it's coordinators in the NFL or, you know, Steve Sarkisian goes and he's a head coach at a big time college program. You know, I think Patriots offensive coordinator job could provide a lot of those same things, if not to a even higher degree. You know, I think Josh McDaniels got a lot of credit, and rightfully so, for helping Mac Jones get to where he got as a rookie quarterback in the NFL, where he's taken fifth, and yet he's still the most efficient of any quarterback that was taken in this past draft. You know, if he's able to take Mac Jones and allow him and help him develop into a player who takes another leap, whether it's in year 2, year 3, or year 4, that would be a huge bump for his coaching resume himself, right? And so if he is still dying to be a head coach somewhere, and he just interviewed for the Jaguars job this offseason, so I'm sure that's somewhere on his radar, you know, this wouldn't be a bad spot because of the quarterback that you're working with and the opportunity for growth there.
Just circling back to Gase for a moment, if I can. You mentioned the language. That's something that would be appealing to Belichick. What about his offense and his scheme would appeal to Belichick? Because, like, a lot of fans, I think, look at it and go, well, he kind of failed in Miami and he failed with the Jets. Why do they want this retread? So, like, what about him as a play caller beyond just the language would Bill see in Gase?
I'm not sure, Jones. I think it's just that familiarity. I think it's the fact that he's kind of in the circle of trust. You know, he's a Saban guy. He's a Josh McDaniels guy. He has that background. I think that's probably the biggest piece of it, but it would be hard to look at the evidence, right, with Ryan Tannehill or Sam Darnold and say, this is the guy we want working with our young quarterback. I think, you know, some of the stuff that you hear about Gase in particular is when he was a head coach, you know, there was a lot on his plate, as there is obviously for every head coach, but he wanted to work on the offense and he wanted to focus on that side of it. And that's not unique to him, but I think in a scenario where you're not asking him to be the guy to handle everything, right? So you can get away from whatever went wrong in New York and Miami, and he can just kind of stick his nose into this quarterback development thing. Maybe that's attractive to Bill Belichick. But, man, he went on and on. I don't know if you guys remember any of the quotes before the Patriots played the Jets in 2020.
No, we remember.
Just about the system and how it gives quarterbacks the ability to succeed no matter what's at their disposal in terms of, it sounded like, sort of reading into those comments, you know, the ability to make changes at the line of scrimmage and, you know, the freedom that he would give his quarterbacks to do that. And they had been beset by injuries, and Bill Belichick pointed that out, which – you know, he'll do that for opponents. I don't think he'd ever do that for his team midseason if things weren't going great. But he clearly likes Adam Gase. And so I'm just telling you, the people that I've spoken to, it's essentially, if it doesn't work out with Bill O'Brien for whatever reason, don't be surprised if it's Gase.
Do you guys want the Neil Collins email of the day?
Yeah.
Frequent
sure.
emailer Neil Collins.
Yeah. Love those.
He writes, Adam Gase, offensive genius, and this is sarcasm. In Gase's two seasons as the offensive coordinator in Denver with Peyton Manning, the Broncos had 30 or more points on offense 20 times in 32 games. Pretty good.
Yeah.
In Gase's 5 years as head coach with the Dolphins and Jets, his offense scored 30 or more points 8 times in 90 games. Yeah. 3 of those games went to overtime. In Sam Darnold's rookie season with a defensive-minded head coach in Todd Bowles, and Jeremy Bates is his offensive coordinator, the Jets offense scored 30 or more points 4 times in 13 games. Much higher rate than 8 and 90. And he says in 25 games under Adam Gase, Sam Darnold and the Jets scored 30 or more points 1 time.
Ouch.
Once. Those are the stats on Adam Gase. His Neil Collins. Email of the day. He benefited greatly from being paired with Peyton Manning, which, of course, could be said about Josh McDaniels or Bill O'Brien or any of these guys.
No, but if we're going to be consistent, I've said that about McDaniels before. Like,
yeah.
What's the fascination? He coached Brady. Like, same thing with Gase. His most successful chunk of time was with Peyton Manning. That's not that hard.
And sometimes his offenses look really bad without Peyton Manning. Yes, Phil.
Can I just ask you guys what you might prefer? I think we'd all agree. And even Copen, who I asked on an Expats podcast this week, I said, no. You know, if you had to choose between one of these two guys, he likes both. He likes both a lot. And Mike, you guys are really grilling me today. The lights are hot.
Bill O'Brien. I want Bill O'Brien.
Yeah, he said he want Bill O'Brien. Let me ask you this though: if it was between Gase and Joe Judge, who would you rather?
Gase. Judge. Well, Joe Judge is not an offensive guy, is Gase. He? I mean, we're gonna
is he know, not?
We're gonna consider Joe Judge for a coordinator job.
He worked with receivers. Is he not?
No,
he worked with receivers.
He worked with the receivers here.
It's Bill Belichick's on the O'Brien.
No, Gase in that sense.
I'm saying as number two.
The better question is,
O'Brien's out of it.
Oh,
Gase versus Judge. Gase. Who would you rather?
Gase.
Okay.
Gase versus Nick Caley.
I would.
Gase.
I'd go Caley.
Okay.
Caley.
It might be Caley.
Must be a source. We'll get to the headlines here, and we're back with Phil Perry in a moment.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
You say dialogue, so says.
It's nice to have sort of this open dialect with you to where.
Dialogue.
What
did
I say?
Dialect.
I said dialect.
Zolak and Bertrand, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Phil Perry of NBC Sports Boston is with us. Phil, how do you think the relationship is right now at this moment between Brian Flores and Bill Belichick?
Feels as though there may be a trust issue there.
Oh,
after this.
I mean,
wouldn't you think?
I wouldn't text that guy again.
I mean, not only does he go and use the text without asking Bill Belichick. And listen, Brian Flores is clearly upset and with good reason. And so it's hard to blame the guy. He's focused. He's certainly principled. I think that's probably the first word that honestly would have come to mind if you had asked me for one word on Brian Flores before all this came down. Mm-hmm. From what I know of the guy and what I know other people feel about him, it would have been principled. And so his decision to pursue this and to file this suit, even though it is surprising for a young coach, 40 years old, has a long coaching career ahead of him, if he wanted it, understanding that what he's doing is going to decrease the chances of that happening, it's not shocking at the same time. But for then Flores to last night, it looked like, I'm not sure when the interview happened, I saw it last night, the quote basically saying that the reason Bill Belichick knew was because he helped influence the decision. That kind of removes any doubt as to where Brian Flores is on this and is where, you know, where he is in his relationship with Bill Belichick, I would say.
And that's where it gets dicey for him on that with Bill, to accuse Bill of like really influencing that. You've got to know for sure.
Well, if it's true, it shouldn't be all that dicey, right? I mean, if it's true, but that's.
No, but like your relationship with him as far as where that thing's going to go. Or like we talked about this yesterday too, Jones, the ability of Flores to potentially come back, be his defensive coordinator, and eventually be the head coach.
But they haven't even talked since the text, right? I mean, Flores has confirmed that. So, maybe whether it was dead on Bill's side or not, it sounds like it's been dead on Flores' side for a little while to me.
So you're saying, Jones, that if that is the case, if Bill Belichick said, hey, I think Dave Ball is the better guy for the job. You know, you guys have an athletic quarterback. You just worked with an athletic quarterback. You want an offensive person. You know, the checks sort of favor Dave Ball. You think Flores should be heated by that?
No, I don't think if that's how it went down, I don't necessarily think that's what Flores is accusing him of. I mean, I think Flores is saying Bill can be a bit of a kingmaker in some of these circles. And
yeah, he didn't hand wrap Josh to go there. He hand wrapped Joe Judge to go there.
No, he didn't.
Yeah, and maybe Phil, you're a good person to ask about this too. Like, because I've been wondering, like, how hard did Bill push for Flores in Miami a few years ago? How hard was he pushing for Flores this cycle? Like, maybe that's part of Flores' beef too. I don't know, but I wonder.
Maybe, and I know it has left coaches sour in the past. You know that the McDaniels Judge situation is a good one, though, because that happened really quickly. And Josh wasn't even able to interview for that job, which he wanted to. And Joe Judge went there with Bill Belichick's blessing. And so it honestly wouldn't surprise me if the Giants went to Bill Belichick and said, what do you think? What would surprise me is if, you know, it was a conversation that went anywhere outside of, you know, football and what it's like to work with the guy. And, you know, what Brian Flores is accusing is racism, you know? And so,
yes,
I think this is going to be a very, clearly there's a problem in the NFL. It's a joke what the numbers are in terms of the head coaches.
Yep. I mean,
I think it's a complicated one to fix too. And I think it's going to be difficult for him, not knowing what he has in terms of evidence. It might be a difficult one for him to prove in a court of law.
See, and the fact that
this stuff is happening.
The thing that sucks is there's still openings, you know, like Houston is sitting there and they're talking about like hiring McCown. If they hire McCown over a guy that's won 10 games back to back these last two seasons.
So there's been six hires so far, right?
Yeah.
And they've all gone to white coaches.
Right.
So I think that's you know, making his case for him to a degree too.
Nobody wants Eric Bieniemy. Nobody wants Eric Bieniemy. I mean, he was a hot name 3 years ago. Now all of a sudden it's fallen off the face of the earth. I haven't heard Bieniemy. I think somebody stepped up. And
I think it's the Saints. I think he's going to interview with the Saints.
Maybe
tomorrow.
The interview.
I don't even think that's confirmed. But
I thought he might go to Chicago because a Kansas City guy went to Chicago and became the GM there.
Yep.
I don't think he even interviewed in Chicago.
You got Justin Fields there, all that. Yep. Athletic quarterback, move around.
So, listen, the numbers are a joke, and they're going to continue to be a joke. I was talking to somebody earlier this week, and they said, we may come to the end of this week or the next couple weeks, and there could be nine openings, and you might have nine white new head coaches in the NFL.
That's terrible.
And that's after, I think there were eight openings last year, and you had one minority hired, and it was David Culley, who has since been fired, of course. after 1 year
and Sala.
With a bad roster.
And Sala, right? So maybe two minority.
Oh, and Sala.
Hires,
but sure,
one,
sure.
One,
yep.
one black yep. head coaching hire, yeah.
One, yep. Nope. Thank you for correcting me on that, Jones. But, you know, and the Cully situation is a good one for them to look at, too. I think that I've heard people say, like, how does the $100,000 per loss thing factor into the discrimination suit? But I think the point that they may try to make, and they may bring up David Cully in this, if this is the case they're trying to make, which is minority head coaches get hired to lose, and they are
yes.
they're hired to be the fall guy.
So you get hired in a bad spot.
You get hired to coach a bad roster.
Yep.
You come away with a bad record. The owner gets the draft pick he wants, and then you get sent on your way after 1 year. Because you did your job, you lost your games.
Yeah,
thank you very much. Then we get to hire the guy that we want after the fact. If that's what Flores was thinking, he thought his job was in Miami because the owner makes it feel that way. And instead, he finishes his first season strong when nobody was anticipating that. And then he has two back-to-back winning seasons. You know, maybe he's looking at it and he's saying, well, Stephen Ross wanted me to be Steve Wilks. He wanted me to be David Cully. And I wasn't. I didn't let it happen. And I got fired anyway. That could be the case that they're trying to make with this 100,000 per loss thing.
Yeah, I would say David Cully is a good example of there's sham interviews. There's also a sham hiring.
He knew he was a puppet.
Yeah. I mean, we all knew when he got hired, like, oh, he's going to be out in a year. They're going to can him.
Right.
He's not long for that job. And they did. And I can understand why, but it also is proof of, you know, why was that the guy they chose to be that guy for the year? They could have chosen anybody to be a lame duck hire to bridge that gap of being terrible. They could have chosen anyone. Why'd they pick him?
Why him?
Because I don't think he deserved to be a head coach to begin with. I don't think he's going to make for a good head coach. I don't think he was a good, you know, there's people who make the case that he was a good head coach there given the roster. I would disagree with that. There was all kinds of evidence in game that he was not, didn't have a great hold on being a head coach. And it was a surprise hire to begin with.
It was a surprise hire. He'd never been a coordinator. He did win four games, though. Same number of games he won the year before. No DeAndre Hopkins, no Deshaun Watson. Like, that's an awful team. And if it was a coach that you really had any sort of promise for who won four games, you know, they bring in Cliff Kingsbury after the Cardinals hire Steve Wilks. Kingsbury gets a job after getting fired as a college head coach. He wins five games, and he gets more time.
Yeah.
I think that's the kind of thing that minority coaches are looking at and saying, are we not going to do anything about this year? So this is not just one event with Brian Flores in the Giants job. This is a confluence of events over many years for a lot of these guys.
And you put him in a spot to where you sat a guy making $10 million. He's top five player in the league, great quarterback, and you knew you weren't going to play him. So you're putting him already in a tough spot. Now, the young kid played well. He did. Mills played well. But really, if you're taking that gig, you're doing it because Deshaun Watson's there. You could also bitch about that. I would. Yeah, you put me in a bad spot and you keep good players away from me. So
it's a difficult situation to try to solve, though.
Yeah.
I talked to Joe Banner earlier this week, longtime NFL executive, and he actually thinks that some of the things that they've done in the last year and a half will eventually help and the numbers will get better based on some of those changes that they've made. But the problem is if they are going to make a change, it might not be for 5 or 10 years down the road because the changes that they've made have been focused on hiring more minority candidates at lower levels and letting them work their way through the system so that by the time they are head coaching candidates, general manager candidates, you know, and teams are looking for those jobs, teams that are going through those interview processes, they won't be able to help themselves but to interview five minorities if they interview 10 people in total for that gig because the pipeline is so filled with these people that have been hired and developed and turned themselves into great candidates for these jobs. You know, that's the rule that I'm referring to is the one that says, you know, we've talked about it a little bit. I know some people have brought it up to me. If Jerod Mayo, for instance, were to get hired somewhere else under this new rule, if he became a head coach under this new rule, the Patriots would get three draft picks. So you're incentivizing, if you're the lead, you're incentivizing teams to develop minority candidates as executives, as coaches, because it could down the line not only help you in terms of your development of this individual coach and he becomes a better coach,
right?
But if he moves on, you also get something in return. And so, you know, that's something that might help down the line. I hope it does. But again, change needs to happen now. And the change that we're talking about for a rule that's a year old, just about, we might not see the fruits of that. That might not get real traction, might not result in real head coaching hires, you know, until these guys are ready to be head coaches.
A couple minutes with Phil Perry coming up right after this on a Finish Strong Friday on Zolak and Bertrand. Don't go anywhere.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Hardy, a lot of good responses for your pickle.
Excuse me. I think that would be really weird.
Zolak and Bertrand, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Final segment here with Phil Perry. Any final thoughts today, Phil, that we didn't get to with you?
We covered a lot of ground today, boys.
We really did.
Just
did.
Really proud of us.
What a jam-packed hour.
The hell room.
You guys got RJ on?
Who is sources?
Sorry.
Good. What do you say?
I was asking if you had RJ.
We are going to have RJ briefly. RJ. Yes.
Yeah, we're going to bring him in.
Quick question.
How are you guys feeling about any early wagers on the big game?
Well, I just saw one that's someone put down $4.5 million on the Bengals to win the game.
Oh, I love it.
Ooh.
Jim Mattress Mac.
You'll get that nickname somehow.
He's a big furniture guy. He owns like furniture factories in Texas, I guess. Yeah. He bet $4.5 million at Caesars.
Oh, man.
Significant.
So you take those bets, huh?
I did actually have a question for you guys related to the Super Bowl. Mm. And we could get to this maybe next week. But I like Jones's take of rooting for the Bengals. Because it twists the knife in some way for the Patriots. Is that right, Jones? Did I have that right?
Yes.
I was listening on the way in.
Yeah, that's what I'm always rooting for. Yeah, twisting the knife, yes.
So here's my question, and I've written about this in the past, and people freak out. I don't think Mac Jones is Joe Burrow. I don't think Mac Jones athletically will probably ever be Joe Burrow. But my take on Joe Burrow is that he at least has proven that you don't need a superhuman athlete, a quarterback, to win at a high level. Right. Before Mac Jones was drafted, it was like, well, look, the only pocket passers that win in today's NFL are Tom Brady and Drew Brees. Good luck being one of those guys.
Yeah.
I think Joe Burrow right now, he's a scrambler. He's a good athlete. I don't think he has a very good arm.
He's a savvy player, man.
He's very savvy. He does all well, listen, his superpower, if you want to put it that way, is his poise, his accuracy, how he thinks his way through the game, which are all things that we sort of associate with Mac Jones. So if the Bengals can win at a high level with this quarterback, should it not give Patriots fans a little bit of a glimmer of hope and say, well, our guy might not be exactly like that guy, but he's much closer to that guy than he is to Josh Allen or Patrick Mahomes. We thought we might need one of those superheroes to win this thing, and it turns out we don't.
And have Stafford poop the bed. Yep.
Yeah, so they just got to do it next year, and they'll be good. They'll be right on the same timeline.
Well, I do like that part of your theory. I love that part of your theory because I think it puts pressure on the Patriots to build around Mac Jones to see what he is, right? Give him weapons. See what he is in year two, in year three. Don't wait till year five or six.
That's why you got to watch his Pro Bowl, Beetle. See, Mac Jones with high-end talent.
Got to watch that Pro Bowl. Got to put more pressure on the Pats to get him that talent.
What if he goes 20 of 22 in the Pro Bowl and just dices him up?
He's out there slinging it, you know?
What will Jones lead with then?
Was that on the air, Morgan? Morgan just said 20 of 22 for 68 yards.
No. That was not on the air.
Did you guys see the accuracy contest where he was trying for those four-pointers deep down the field?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
The short ones, though, into the flat.
Oh, nailed it.
Money.
Yeah.
He can only do so many.
Hunter Renfrow almost beat him on the deep throw last night, yeah. Renfrow, the wide receiver, yeah.
Effortless for Russell Wilson.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
At least he wasn't short. He wasn't short on those deep balls. They were just a little
be short.
Off.
No, it's an accuracy thing. I've been saying that all year.
I thought it was weird.
His accuracy on the deep throws is what hurts him, not the strength.
I thought it was weird, Phil, in the precision contest last night where he kept trying to check into a running play. I thought that was weird where they kept trying to do that in the middle of that.
I missed that. Was he doing the alert? Point to the helmet?
Yeah,
alert,
he was
alert.
Like, hey, can we run it here? Can we run it? What do we think?
Get to the second play.
Look at that.
So now I guess I got
to
watch. I guess I got to watch the Pro Bowl now. I was definitely not planning on watching the Pro Bowl, but you've convinced me.
Yep.
It's a Finish Strong Friday, and it's presented by 128 Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electric. They've teamed up with Hall of Fame defenseman Ray Bourque. That is what they have done because they are defending the future of the trades, donating up to $25,000 to create scholarships for future trades workers. Apply for the scholarship now at call128.com. And by the way, that website is the word call128.com. I had someone email and ask that earlier today. Call128.
How would you take that any different?
I don't know. They went to 128.com.
Oh, DOT.
They're like, what's going on here? And I'm like, no. Call128.com. That's the website for 128. Phil, are you still there or are we disconnect?
He's gone.
I'm here. I can hear you guys. Okay. I don't know if you can hear me.
Thanks for the time.
Thanks,
today.
Phil. Have a good week.
Thank you, guys.
So what's our plan for next week? Will you be here? You will. From L.A.
I will be talking to you guys from L.A., yes.
Perfect. That's looking forward to it.
All right. Same here.
See you, Phil.
Talk to you soon, guys.
Go to
Bye.
The Ivy.
Phil Perry, NBC Sports Boston. We are going to touch base with R.J. Bell coming up. You checked in, said you want to do a little something, and I said, of course. A week to the Super Bowl. Let's find out when the best time is to maybe think about placing that Super Bowl bet.
Absolutely.
Is this line going to move at all? What's going to happen? We'll talk to RJ about it coming up after headlines.
Find out next.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task. But after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.